Now, the jungle is a difficult place to survive under the most ideal of circumstances, and it's best when there not to upset the natives. But Cecil once again fell prey to the lure of tawny flesh, and thus we had to make a very rapid exit. On this occasion, the porters, a particularly mutinous bunch, were found rummaging in the baggage train. One of the little blighters had laid his hands on our entire supply of soap. "Stop him," yelled the Major. "Stop that man!" Now, civilized men might do without a good many things in the jungle, but to deprive a fellow of his soap was to reduce him to the level of these damned savages. And this little bugger knew it. It was mutiny of the worst kind. "Shoot that fellow," yelled the Major. "Shoot him down." "No, not that one. The one on the left." "No, my left, for God's sake." "All right, your left." "No, that's still not right." "No, left. Don't you know you're right from your left, for God's sake, man." Looking back on it, it's hard to imagine we trusted that damn fool with a rifle in the first place. Completely hopeless, no sense of direction, couldn't tell his right from his left. No time at all, it decimated the entire party of bearers. We had to carry the damn packs ourselves. But worse than that, in the confusion, the little bugger with the soap had made off into the jungle. Now we were faced with a very long march and no toiletries. No wonder the men were nervous. The stench was unbearable. Well, it wasn't long before the verse of the trouble started, and Clemens was the first to crack. He started behaving strangely, constantly rushing down to the river's edge and scrubbing furiously at his armpits. Well, the men suspected he'd been holding out, thought he'd secreted a piece of soap somewhere about his person. Well, you know how these rumors travel. Mutiny and discontent was rife in our ranks. I should have been more suspicious. The men were very quiet that evening, then suddenly... It was assumed, of course, that he'd taken his own life rather than face the disgrace. We found a white feather in his pack, but of course we never found the soap. Hibbertson was the next man to do something completely stupid. Attempted to make his own soap out of bacon rind, which he'd been hoarding, though God knows why. Rubbed himself all over the stuff and threw himself in the river. Unfortunately, it drew the crocodiles for bloody miles. Lost a lot of good men that day. Now, it's a strange thing, but it's a proven fact that at times like these of extreme adversity, quite often an individual comes to the fore. Godfrey, God bless him, at this point decided to raise morale, dragged out his grandfather's mandolin, and picked out a few well-chosen songs to raise the spirit of camaraderie, get the chaps all together again in one great campfire sing-song.
"Oh, missus, it's turned out nice again. Oh, I'm leaning on a lamppost at the corner.
The men seemed unusually irritable on that occasion. We thought it best to retire early. The following day, the rains cleared and we came upon the outskirts of a native village not marked on the maps. The Major thought it would be a good idea to approach the village headmen and try and secure ourselves a new supply of porters. They seemed very suspicious of us, though. At the time, we didn't know why.
"Go away, white devil. We no longer fear you. Were you to think you were gods because you did not stink as other men? But now we know your little secret. You will no longer seek our young men."
"Dear God, this bloody soap business had gone too far. Now they were on to us. "Stop that man," yelled the Major. "Stop him now." "No, not him, you fool. On the right." "No, my right." "All right, your right then. No, the other right. Dear God, man." Once again, we had lost the trust of the natives and were reduced to carrying our own packs. This in itself would have been bad enough, but unfortunately the village headman managed to lay a curse on us before he died. Now, I'm not a superstitious fellow, but cast as is. Poor fool was utterly terrified, became convinced that he was going to die and then go straight to hell, started asking all sorts of morbid questions about the afterlife and what he might expect there. I did my best to comfort him, of course, but it was hopeless. In the afterlife, You could be headed for a serious strife. Now you make a scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
In the afterlife, you could be headed for a serious strife. Now you make a scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
Now people listen attentively, I mean about future calamity. I used to think the idea obsolete, till I heard the devil stamping his feet. There is a place where eternally fire is applied to the body. Teeth are extruded and bones are ground, baked into cakes then passed around.
In the afterlife, you will be ready for the serious life. You're to make a scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
Money, refinement, top skill and brains, and all the things you tried to hide will be revealed on the other side.
In the afterlife, you will be ready for the serious life. Now you make a scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
And the A and the M and the N and the A and the T and the I O N. Lose your face, lose your name. Get fitted for a suit of flames.
In the afterlife, you could be heading for the serious life. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
All the talking only seemed to make it worse. He rolled his eyes, curled up his toes, fell into a deep sleep. There was no rousing him. Now, we'd seen this sort of behavior before, but never amongst civilized men. The Major, however, had a plan. He reasoned that since it was the work of some heathen witch doctor that had thrown his man into this dire jeopardy, then perhaps the use of another might rouse him from it. Thus resolved, a party of volunteers was assembled. They rushed off to the nearest village and kidnapped the medicine man, brought him back kicking and struggling in a sack. The Major instructed him in Swahili to bring his man back into the world of the living. Looking back on it, it's easy to see now that Swahili was a poor choice of language. The Major had no fluency in it, and the native understood not a word. But somehow between them they did wreak a change in Carstairs, who was brought very rapidly to his feet. On the plus side, of course, we didn't have to carry him back in the stretcher. He was at least walking on his own. Although, due to a fairly epic misunderstanding, he was now a zombie. The men found this very unsettling at first, the shambling gait, the rolling eyes, and of course the fearful smell. But we figured we'd just another 5 days' march back to base camp, and providing we could stop him from biting people, there was a fair chance we'd be all right. Though God knows what his wife was going to make of it. Still, there was a problem for another day. Or so we thought. You see, the thing was that as troublesome as Carstairs might have been during the daytime, at night he proved particularly restless. There was no way we were getting any sleep unless we did something drastic. And so the chaps elected to bury him by the side of the road. He was dead after all, he shouldn't mind. Well, it slowed him down a bit, but in no time at all he dug himself back out again and was becoming a particular nuisance. After we'd buried him for the 5th or 6th time, it was obvious that the situation was hopeless. The only way we'd get any sleep at all was if we slept in shifts. It took 5 months to arrive back at base camp, by which time the men smelled appalling and Carstairs was little more than corruption in a khaki suit. Thank God it was nearly over. All the chaps could think about was that bathhouse and a hot towel. Oh, by Jove. Even now, fate had one last twist in store for us. As we approached base camp, we discovered it to be surrounded by a warlike band of savages. But unlike the regular sort, these were the buggers that stole our soap. The sentries were entirely unaware of them. The usual stench that accompanied them was now accompanying us. There was about to be a calamity of the worst possible kind. The sentries were shooting at us, but they missed entirely the fact that they were surrounded by these damned sweet-smelling fuzzy-wuzzies. The Major was furious. We decided that there was just one chance, and one chance only. Down in the bay, we could see a British gunboat at anchor. In a moment of sheer genius, the Major had an answer. He sent Weens to the top of a very tall tree with some map coordinates and a set of his grandmother's semaphore flags, which he always kept with him. It was his intention to direct a naval bombardment straight on top of these damned natives. That would put an end to this mutiny and end the soap business once and for all. Or so we thought. What on earth is that fellow shooting at? Not there, to the left! No, my left! No, damn it, man, did you know you're right from your left? The other left! No, that left! Oh, dear heavens! It was a complete disaster. The base camp was flattened and the damn fuzzy-wuzzies ran off into the bush with yet another supply of soap. Wiggins continued to misdirect the naval bombardment until in the end the Major had to shoot him out of the tree. And that, thank God, was the end of that. But of course, that's not how we tell the story down at the Explorers Club.